another one of the fruit that is something that we bear as Christians. And we'll go back to John the Baptist. Last week he talked about how we bear fruit when we are content with what we have. And tonight he makes this statement in Luke 3. Again, he's talking to, whether he's talking to Roman soldiers or he's talking to Jewish soldiers, I'm not sure. But he makes this statement in Luke 3. Let me see. He says, the soldiers asked him, they were saying, what must we do? He said to them, extort from no man by violence, neither accuse anyone wrongfully, and be content with your wages. Now that's from the American Standard Translation. If you look at that in the King James Translation, it sounds a little bit different. It says, what shall we do? He said unto them, do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages. So if you're reading it from the King James Translation, it sounds like he's saying, don't do violence to anyone. If you look at it in the American Standard or the New International or any of the newer translations, it tends to say, extort from no man by violence. And so when it says do violence to no man, I thought, well, I need to understand what he means when he says don't do any violence. And we don't get much help looking for parallel uses of this same term, because unfortunately it's only used one time in the New Testament. This is the only place that it's used. It's from Strong, it means to shake thoroughly, like this, I think, to intimidate, to do violence to. To intimidate carries with it the idea of unequal power. The Roman soldier had the arms and had the backing of the soldiers, and the average citizen wouldn't have that. And so the soldiers would have a tendency to shake or to intimidate. Thayer says it's to shake thoroughly, to make to tremble, to terrify, to agitate, or he says, and this is kind of his last definition, to extort from one by intimidation, money or other property. So I did a little bit of research on Roman soldiers, trying to understand how the Roman soldiers typically worked. This is something that I found from a historian who writes about the Roman army. He says, for many civilians, the army was a far more constant presence than through the occasional parade or spectacle. One way in which soldiers came into regular contact with civilians was while obtaining supplies for their units. Some of the supply process was carried out in centralized fashion, where the army headquarters would send supplies out and they would arrive on a boat or sometimes on a wagon. But, he says, the soldiers collected large amounts of the required supplies themselves. So it was like you were quartering soldiers. You know what quartering means? When the British were in America, they stayed in the homes of the American colonists. And you were required to quarter the British soldiers. Okay? In many cases, especially for those troops based within cities, the simplest way to obtain these supplies was to visit the local market. Here it was not always a simple matter of picking up the goods and paying sticker price for them. Roman soldiers rarely paid full price. One historian, John Malalas, records an action that Emperor Diocletian, who reigned from 284 to 305, undertook in Antioch. He built granaries to store corn. He gave everyone measures for corn and all other commodities on sale so that none of the market traders would be intimidated by the soldiers. So this emperor tried to end that practice, saying, here's a measure. This is the value of the corn that's in this measure. So you can't just go in and take what you want. And you can't take it at a reduced price. Obviously, Malalas says, the soldiers were demanding to pay less for their grain than other customers. A century later, an orator, Libanius, who lived in Antioch, described another type of situation that might have occurred in Diocletian's market. A soldier provokes a market trader, employing abuse and verbal insult. He lays hands on him, manhandles and ill-treats him. Such persons must raise neither voice nor hand against the soldier, and so this poor market seller, who is doomed to suffer, is arrested for resisting arrest. Thrown into the guard room, purchases the right not to be flogged to death.
Wow.
So this is intimidation to get what you want. And you can't fight back. It's like fighting back against the army.
But you still get arrested even though you...
Yeah, you get arrested. It's that's why I think John links the idea of don't make a false accusation. Because that's the way they could intimidate people. They would just come in and arrest you and then confiscate your goods because you've been arrested. So, conduct was hardly likely to endear soldiers to the population of the city, nor were these problems confined to cities. They occurred wherever soldiers were stationed. Earlier in the same speech, Libanius laments the predations of garrisons based in villages around Antioch, which he says included looting, cutting down trees. They would go onto your property, cut down a tree, slaughtering and barbecuing cattle, and abducting women. Now that's in the extreme, they would abduct women. But they would come onto your property, decide that they needed a cow, they would kill your cow. You had no response. All these actions were, of course, illegal, but, and here's the thing that the soldiers relied on, the court system to which one had to appeal was run by the military.
But they won every time.
Often there was little hope of redress. The problems of exploitation extended far beyond individual soldiers or groups of soldiers. The system itself could be no less corrupt. The city of Leptis Magna in North Africa was suffering from barbarian incursions in the late 4th century, so its inhabitants, not surprisingly, the city sent an embassy to the emperor to complain. After all, they'd already paid heavy taxes for the privilege of being Romans. Romanus, however, was a skilled political operator with friends at the imperial court. Despite being prosecuted, he was acquitted. So, this is the kinds of things that went on. This is the... That doesn't mean that every soldier was this way, okay? Because we know Cornelius was a just man, okay? And he was a soldier. So we know there were good soldiers who didn't do this kind of thing, but it was common for soldiers to do this. Not just Roman soldiers. Jewish soldiers did the same thing. If you're familiar with the history of the Civil War, you know what happened during the Civil War. The South, or the North in particular, when they came into the South fighting against Lee, went onto farms, took all of the property, took everything that they could find, and you had no recourse. You know, it was like you're going to stand up with 40 guys with guns, and you're going to stand up and say, wait, you can't take my cow. It doesn't work that way. So, one of the things that he says is, don't do that. Which makes a lot of sense. And I said it wasn't just the Romans, it wasn't confined to just the Romans. The Jews did the same thing. Zacchaeus, who you encounter in Luke 19, in Luke 19, he has this conversation with Jesus. And he is a Jewish tax collector. He's a publican. The Jews hated the publicans because of the way that they conducted their business. They extorted money. And it was extortion in the same way. They would report you to the Romans for not paying your taxes, and then you had no recourse. You were arrested, you were tried, you were inevitably found guilty. So it wasn't just the Romans. He may have been talking to Roman soldiers. He may also have been talking to Jewish soldiers at the time. So there's no way of knowing that, but it would have applied to the Jews as well. And not just soldiers. So, somebody want to read Luke 19, verse 8? This is what Zacchaeus says to Jesus as he encounters Jesus. Remember, Zacchaeus is this publican. Okay, so some.
Oh, do you want somebody from the Zoom to read?
It doesn't matter. Go ahead.
And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. Sounds like a good guy.
Sounds like he was convicted, he was convinced that Jesus was the Messiah, but it also sounds like he had made it a habit to take extra.
So he's changing his ways.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. The publicans generally got to be publicans because they bought the office. And then they overcharged in order to make a profit on the office that they had to buy. So Zacchaeus is really no different than anybody else.
I was going to say, we have politicians
today. Yeah,
they
have politicians back then that did exactly the same thing.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes, you know. So there is this sense in which he's really just saying, be honest. Don't extort from people just because you can. Okay? Then there's this long discussion in Matthew 18. And I think it bears on this, but in order to get the feel for this, you really have to look at the entirety of Matthew 18, or the entirety of this conversation. It goes from verse 1 down through verse 25. Okay? So let's just read this together. Somebody want to read 21 and 22?
Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to 7 times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not 7 times, but 77 times.
Okay. So this is the situation that Peter is setting up. Do I forgive you? Then Jesus tells this story to answer Peter's question. Somebody read 23 through 25. You want to read that, Jane? 23 through 25?
Okay, hold on here.
Okay.
For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wishes to settle accounts with his slaves. When he has begun to settle them, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. But since he did not have the means to repay his lord, commanded him to be sold along with his wife and children and all that he had, and repayment to be made.
Okay, so this is debtor's prison, and we're not familiar with that. We don't have debtor's prison anymore. We replaced that with what I think is a more equitable system. But this man owed 10,000 talents. Okay, I don't know whether he borrowed it or he was taking care of a man's field and that was what it yielded and he had to pay. But this is a legitimate debt. This is not his master coming and saying, you know, you owe me 1,000, give me 2. Shaking him up. This is legitimate debt. Okay? Then let's look at 26 and 27.
The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt.
Okay. Master forgave him the debt, but the man said, I will pay it. So, it's apparently a legitimate debt. Okay? I sold you my car. Sold you my car. You agreed to pay me $1,000 for my car, $100 a month, and after 1 month, you stop paying. There's no reason why I can't come to you and attempt to collect a legitimate debt. And that's apparently what's going on here. The man had no ability to pay, and the creditor, the person who should have been paid, he says, it's okay, it's forgiven. But understand, this is grace. This is not what he had to do. This is grace. So, let's continue reading in our story, 28 through 30.
But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he had paid the debt.
Okay, so now this man that has been forgiven goes out, grabs somebody else that owes him money, and says, you have to pay me. Okay, there's not a question in this about whether the money is owed or not. The money is owed. It's not like he's intimidating this man. Now he tries to collect it with violence. That's true. He grabs a man, shakes him, and says, pay up. But that's different than a man who's extorting money that he's not owed. Okay? So he has him thrown into prison until he can pay the debt. And again, this is debtor's prison. The way this worked is you went to prison, you then were forced to work, and your wages went to the person that you owed the money to. Now, 31 through 34.
So when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to their lord all that had happened. Then summoning him, his lord said to him, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave in the same way that I had mercy on you?" And his lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he could should repay all that was owed him.
Okay, so this time we clearly see that forgiving the debt was a matter of mercy. It was a matter of grace. It was not something that you had to do. If somebody owes you the money, then there's nothing wrong with collecting. Okay? And the kind of the key is the last verse.
Doesn't it make you feel like though that, I mean, he's saying that I forgave you, you need to forgive that one.
Okay.
Maybe I don't want to, or maybe I need my money. I mean, if there's nothing wrong with getting your debt, then why did he go to jail?
He went to jail because he didn't show mercy, not because he tried to collect the debt.
And showing mercy would be, I forgive you of the debt?
Yeah, or I'll give you more time.
Okay, I got it.
And once he gets in jail, how's he going to go out to earn money to pay us?
But that's what I was thinking, but he said while they were in there, they worked. Whatever money they made, which was probably a pittance, went to the person they owed.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, that's generally what happened. So this is a matter of don't do violence to collect more than is owed, and in fact, be understanding. If you're in the position of being the creditor, and somebody needs more time to pay, extend the time. And sometimes, if somebody can't pay, forgive the debt. But if I sell you my house, and you agree to pay on a time schedule, okay, and then you stop paying, there's nothing wrong with me taking you to court to enforce the contract that we have.
Because that's not, I mean, that's a lot of money. And you don't sell something. A lot of times you sell something because you need the money badly.
Yeah.
It's not just out of, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's that you need the money badly or sorry, I wasn't advancing the slides there the way I should have been. There's a story in the Old Testament which kind of illustrates the principle of taking from the poor man just because he's poor and he can't fight back. Okay? This is the story that Nathan tells to David. And of course, he's talking about David raping Bathsheba. But he tells him this story that's really interesting because it illustrates a principle. People who are in power can very often abuse their power because the people that are below them just can't fight back. And so here's the situation. Lord sends Nathan to David. He comes to him and he tells him this story. Two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb he had bought. He raised it, it grew up with him and his children, it shared his food, drank from his cup, even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the little ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. So he's taking advantage of the situation. He's taking advantage of an unequal position. And he's just, he comes in and takes this man's sheep because he can. And the indication is it's the king who does this. So if the king came and took your sheep, you let him take your sheep. So this was something that the Jews understood, because it had happened. If you read through the minor prophets, you see over and over again how the rich were oppressing the poor, and they were taking their goods, especially poor women. If your husband died, you didn't have a way to pay your bills, okay? Especially if you had no sons. The rich man would come along and he'd just take your house. And you couldn't fight back. You didn't have the means to fight back. And they knew that. And you, in the minor prophets, you see it a lot. That the rich were oppressing the poor. They were taking widows' houses. That's what they were doing. Somebody want to read Ezekiel 22, verse 29? This is the prophet Ezekiel, and of course, he is not happy about this. So he is really castigating the people. This is his complaint to God.
The people of the land practice extortion and commit robbery. They oppress the poor and needy and mistreat the foreigner, denying them justice.
Go ahead.
That's not what you wanted?
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
Oh,
I should have put
some more.
Should have put verse 30 as well.
Oh, right. Oh, I was not reading from there. Yeah. Why don't you read it? So that's how my verse 29, that's how I got.
There are those who oppress the innocent, take bribes, and deprive the poor justice in the court.
Okay. So. Oh, okay. So what Ezekiel is saying is these people are taking property by force. And on top of that, which is even worse, they're using the court system to take your property. I don't know if you've ever had to go to court to defend against a lawsuit, but it's very expensive. Somebody sues you, even if you win, it costs you a fortune to defend yourself.
Really, the only people that win is the lawyers.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, but I've heard it said a lot of times the best way to turn a big fortune into a small fortune is to win your court case.
Yeah.
So what version, I feel so confused, Ezekiel 22 verse 29, which
okay.
is what I read, and you have so much more to yours.
I probably took that from the New International Translation.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know which
right,
version
yeah.
it was all.
Yeah, that's okay.
But there's a way to do this where it's just really obvious. You come up to a man who's selling corn and you say, give me a double measure of corn and I'm only gonna pay you for one. Okay. And I'm bigger and tougher and meaner, and I'm a soldier, and I've got a sword, and you don't. That's one kind of intimidation. There's another kind of intimidation where a person in power just abuses his power, and he doesn't shake you. He doesn't do violence to you. He just comes on your property and takes what he wants. Okay? And then there's legal extortion. This is doing violence to people just as much as grabbing them by the lapels and shaking them back and forth and saying, if you don't give me this, I'll bloody your nose. This is harder to comprehend, but this is what the people of Israel were doing. They would take you to court, and knowing that they could win because they had the funds to pursue the action, and you didn't. So you're going to lose. If you go to court and you get a pile of paperwork filed against you, you've got to hire an attorney, and you're paying $100 an hour, $150 an hour for him to answer all of it. Pretty soon you run out of money. So you lose. You lose not because you lost the case, but because you couldn't defend it. You didn't have the money to defend it. This happens a lot with people who will sue, like, cities, and the city knows that they could win, but it's going to cost them a fortune to go to court and win the case, so they pay the guy off.
That happened with the company we had a couple of times. It was, and the attorney said, it's cheaper just to pay him off.
Yeah, it's going to cost you $250,000 to defend this in court, and they're asking for $100,000. Just give them the $100,000.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it was 10 times, but still, yeah, it's still money.
It's still money, and it's extortion.
Yeah,
it's not by force. It's using the court system against them. But that's what was happening. Jeremiah 7 and verse 6, if you do not oppress the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then Jeremiah is saying you'll be blessed. Okay? So you don't shed the blood of an innocent man. You don't take a man's goods. You don't take advantage of a poor man just because he's poor. Somebody want to read Malachi 3 at verse 5? And again, understand, this is what Jews did. Now, sometimes the Jews did it to foreigners, because the foreigner couldn't fight back. Or the foreigner could be guaranteed that he was going to lose if he had to go to a Jewish court. Somebody read Malachi 3 at verse 5.
I'll just read it. So I will come to put you on trial. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers, adulterers, and perjurers, against those who defraud laborers of their wages, who oppress the widows and the fatherless, and deprive the foreigners among you of justice. But do not fear me, says the Lord Almighty.
Okay, so we've already talked about some of these categories. They oppress the widows and the fatherless. They defraud the laborers of their wages. You know, I'm a landowner. You come and work for me. I say I'm going to pay you $50 at the end of the day. At the end of the day, I give you $30, and you can't fight back. That's defrauding. It's not defrauding by force. It's taking advantage of my position to shortchange you. Okay? He says, you deprive the foreigners among you of justice. I have not been to any other country than just Canada, and I went into Mexico a couple of times, but I have been in the position where I was driving across country, and I'm driving a car with a California license plate, and I go through some little bitty town in Alabama, and suddenly I get a ticket for speeding. And you say, well, wait, I wasn't speeding. And the constable says, that's okay. You can plead your case in court. You'll have to be here in person next month. Well, I can't afford to do that. They know I'm a foreigner. I got a California license plate on my car. So they're taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
And the Jews did it. And it's not just Jews. We do it today. They did it to foreigners among them, and they were foreigners in Egypt, and it would have been easy for the Egyptians to take advantage of them. So there's all kinds of ways that we can get sideways with this notion of extorting funds. Zechariah 7 and verse 10, do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. Do not plot evil against each other. Ezekiel 18 and verse 7, this is a praise, okay? But it's worded so that you understand the things that you weren't supposed to do as well. He says, he does not oppress anyone. He returns what he took in pledge or a loan. So this is a person who makes a loan to somebody. He says, okay, I'll loan you $100. You give me your shovel. And when you pay this $100, I'll give you back your shovel. So this is treating a man fairly. Now, I've been in that kind of position when I was preaching in Brookings. We had all kinds of people come through town, and they needed to borrow money. They needed to get to Portland because they had a job. And I had a lot of people said, well, I don't have anything to give you as collateral, as a pledge. I'll give you my backpack. I never took it, but I would have been perfectly fine taking their backpack as a collateral on the loan. And that's what you do if you buy a car. You're pledging the collateral, the car, against the loan. And if you don't pay it back, they'll come and get your car. And he says, the good man, when the loan is repaid, gives you the pink slip to the car. That's the way it's supposed to work. Okay? If you didn't do that, you would be extorting. Now, there's something just as bad as this kind of extortion, and this is in some directions that Moses gave to judges. This is Exodus 23, and I'm quoting these two verses out of order. First, I want to look at verse 6, and then we'll go back and look at verse 3. Okay? He says, Exodus 23 at verse 6, this is instructions to judges who are going to hear cases. He says, do not rest the judgment of the poor in his cause. So don't say, if you're a judge, you're a poor man, this man is a wealthy man, I'm going to rule in his favor just because you're poor. And this wealthy man can do me favors. Okay? So don't favor the rich man in court just because he's rich. And then in the same way, he says in verse 3, don't countenance a poor man in his cause. Don't say, I'm going to rule in your favor, even though the facts of the case are such that I shouldn't. I'm going to rule in your favor because you're a poor man. And I want to show you favoritism because you're a poor man. That too is extortion. That's not a kind of extortion that we think about very well. But it's becoming more and more prevalent. Okay? So bear fruit. We've talked a lot tonight about what not to do to bear fruit. If I were going to put this in positive terms, how do I bear fruit for God?
By being honest and fair with people, doing good and doing fair.
Okay. I think that's it. Be honest. If you're a seller, have a just set of weights. Don't put your thumb on the scale. Okay? But he's not saying, just give away your goods.
Right.
He's saying, be honest about it. Okay.